Hey everyone, it's David Chen at patreon.com/DaveChen. I'm here today with Joy O. Napping, and we are here to discuss Love is Blind, Season 2, Part 2 of 3, which we learned today is the second of three parts. There's going to be the finale that airs next week, which is going to basically have all the final decisions. How are you doing tonight, Joy?
Well, I was greeted with the terrible news today that I would not get the full conclusion of this series, as I was promised. Netflix, as we all know, is known for simply dumping all of its episodes of a season at once for you to binge watch. And it feels like they're trying something experimental here. We thought this was a 10-episode season, and we'd get 5 last week and 5 this week. In fact, plot twist, we got the first 5. Today we only got 4, and the finale is one more week from now. So it's a very unusual sort of stutter step they're doing here. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No. You know, a lot of streaming companies are experimenting with different release schedules now. I think basically a lot of streaming companies have seen success of organizations like HBO Max and Disney that are releasing their episodes on a weekly basis, and they're generating so much conversation online. Now, Netflix used to claim and have data that, like, if they dumped all the episodes at once, like, more people would watch all the way to the end, right? Like, there, people are binging and so on. But with this new model, I think they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're trying to let people binge a little bit, but also spread the conversation out over more weeks. So this feels like kind of a quote-unquote happy medium, potentially. I'm sure they'll look at the metrics and decide whether to do it in the future or not. But yeah, it's rare to see it like this. Much more common what we're seeing these days is something like what Hulu is doing with Pam and Tommy, or HBO Max is doing with Peacemaker, where they'll release the first 3 episodes and then release them weekly after that, which is also kind of interesting. So anyway, people are experimenting.
Well, it feels like 3 episodes is enough for you to like have a little mini binge and get invested and then decide to make the commitment for the rest of the way. I will say, I can't recall which podcast I heard this on, but someone described Netflix's strategy as all about volume. And they don't mean quantity. They mean decibels. Like, how much does it penetrate the conversation? And so I do think this is a really clever structure for this show in particular, which was one of their most talked about shows a year and change ago.
It debuted like right when the pandemic began, I believe.
But is definitely in a much more crowded field now. Like, it certainly feels like, you know, content is back, baby, and, you know, people are finding ways to film stuff. So the first 5 episodes get us through a certain stage of the, I don't want to call it a competition, but like the reality series. We know who all the couples are. They go off on this Mexico trip together. And what we have in this it honestly leaves us on such a cliffhanger at the end of the first 5 episodes that I was like, well, I have to watch this next week. And these 4
episodes, and now this is even more of a cliffhanger.
Well, so what's interesting is, like, things have changed. People that are set up in the first 5 episodes and edited to look like villains or like tensions that you think are there, maybe don't pan out quite that way in these next 4 episodes, which we will spoil shortly. Haven't yet. And then other like plot twists arise. And so at this point, although I feel a little robbed because it wasn't honestly the greatest 4 episodes of television, it does not quite live up to the excitement of the first 5. I feel like I have no choice but to come back next week, and I've done it on your schedule. You played me, Netflix.
Indeed. Yep. Here we are watching the show and making more content about it. Their plan worked. All that said, let's talk about this next episodes 6 through 9 of Love is Blind Season 2. We're going to spoil them all and dive into it. And I think you really wanted to talk about this tonight. So I'm curious, like, what it is you wanted to talk about. But I will say that for me, the most interesting component of this next 4 episodes is the rehabilitation of Shane and Natalie's relationship, just in terms of the edit, in terms of my perception of them. But like, when I started the show, when we recorded last time, it was like, oh, these people are bad and they don't belong together. I've gone all the way from that to like, wow, there's actually many redeeming things about them together. And I'm not saying I'm like rooting for them, but I certainly don't feel like Shane is a villain anymore, you know? And I think this second half of the season, particularly when you meet their families and stuff, it really illustrates more facets of their personalities. So that's the biggest turnaround for me, is the Shane and Natalie relationship is now something I'm like, okay, I'm potentially in, you know, into this. That said, what's on your mind after watching the four episodes?
Well, I think I vividly recall you saying 1 week ago, Shane is the clear villain of this show. And I think we have a new clear villain based on the storyline that we saw, which is Messica 2, also known as Shayna.
She's not in the show enough, though, really. Like, Messica 2 was in every episode. You know, like...
Messica 1.
Messica 1, yeah, right. We don't even know if Shayna's going to return. She was in the first episode, which was very, probably the most consequential episode, where she breaks up with Kyle and then makes a pass at Shane, basically. And that was like, oh, wow, this is the drama I'm here for. But then she vanishes from the rest of the series. So who knows if she'll come back on the wedding day? Like, we have no idea. But she's not Messica 2 because she's not in the show enough, in my opinion.
Well, so let's talk about this for a second. So I think we should go through all of the couples in order. We've basically started with Kyle and Shayna. They finally actually break up because she finally does really, you know, stop playing this game of, oh, it fits on my thumb, not on my, like, that's why I'm wearing this engagement ring somewhere that's not my engagement finger. You know, like, he meets her family, and it goes poorly and a little bit racistly when they're like, hey, are you a real American? And are you a man of God? The real American part feels like code for white. And the man of God feels like code for our kind of religion, aka not Catholicism. But so he fails that test thoroughly. And I don't think we need to say much more about their relationship, except that somehow in the breakup, I think that Kyle is the one that looks worse because he looks so delusional. He literally cannot fathom that somebody else would want to have someone of the same faith. And he's like, in this day and age, aren't we past that? Because I said I would compromise. Now, what actual compromises have been made are not clear at all. And he is the kind of person who I think, you know, on a dating show, he might say all the right things. I'm really ready for commitment. I really want this. And actually have none of the hallmarks of actually being ready. And so I am worried. I'm worried for Kyle. I hope that Kyle looks back on this and actually, like, learns something from it. He comes off as super, super young and naive.
It's really interesting because I don't have that same perception. I definitely think he comes off as delusional, but I just think that as somebody who has had a very complex faith journey myself, I think it's very difficult for somebody who is atheist, which Kyle is, to comprehend why somebody who is not atheist would find it to be an insurmountable obstacle, right? Because if you think it's all like superstitions and whispers or whatever, the idea that like this could stop you from like being together with the love of your life is like ludicrous, you know what I mean? And so I think that he's just of a belief system that doesn't allow him to really comprehend it. I don't think it's really his naivete only insofar as he doesn't understand what it's like to be in an organized religion, right?
His mother was super Catholic. That's how he actually got there with, like, trying to reconcile with Shayna. Was like, he was like, this is a deal breaker for me. And then he's like, oh, yeah, my mother was super Catholic. So I've seen what that's like. I guess I could attempt to accommodate that. So I don't think that he's as, it's quite as alien as that. But, you know, anyway, whatever.
But let's just say, as somebody, I have dated girls who were, like, much more religious than myself, you know. And it's like, I totally understood what Shayna was saying in that moment. Now, Shayna has not been godly in other ways in her life, as evidenced in the rest of that episode, but I think that I totally got what Shayna was saying. She's like, I need someone to like actually like be leading me in this relationship, not like somebody who I'm like getting to catch up with me. And I'm just like, yeah, like that's a reasonable thing to want if you're a Christian, and it is something that Kyle is definitely never going to be able to provide.
I am an atheist. I've been an atheist since I was 11. Like, I got it. I got what she was saying, and I don't I haven't spent a lot of time in the church.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So who else do you want to talk about?
Well, farewell to Kyle, but let's talk about Shayna next. So Shayna, of course, wears a crop top to the beach, sees Shane, gets him aside. By the way, Shane and every other man on this show, I think they are given an infinity, like, gift card or something to some place that sells these, like, sort of tight button-down shirts with, like, little flamingos or little flowers. They all look like they come from the same store. It's just shocking. So he's wearing one of those, and they have a little sit-down. And I actually thought that Natalie did an okay job sort of reining it in. But she did, I mean, Shayna transparently attempted to ascertain whether Shane and Natalie were still together, number one, passive-aggressively told Natalie, hey, I've got a backup for you if you and Shane ever break, like trying to plant the seed, like it's okay if you guys break up. And then more or less like makes a pass at him, you were always my number one, you know, et cetera.
Well, not even that, just saying your relationship is a fraud.
Well, then when he doesn't respond right away, she escalates it to that. Because I think she knows it's her last chance probably before he gets married, right? So, boy, does she look not godly, like you were saying, in that sequence. And then what's really tough is, you know, she tries to, like, not make herself look like the bad guy. I'm sure she doesn't want to be known as Messica too, right? So she's like, well, you know, that was really taken out of context. And, like, let me explain the context. And it was really, like, a joke. But, like, isn't it a red flag that she came and told you about it? Isn't it? And, like, everything that Natalie did was actually super reasonable. And so, you know, if this is what it takes to sow doubt to break up Shane and Natalie, like, I don't feel like Shayna should feel terribly proud of her tactics here. And Carter, who watched it with us, our bubble mate Carter, and I agree that this is not the way to Shane's heart. Shane does not respond to negativity at all. He completely shuts down. You know, he does not want to be told people are laughing at you and your relationship is a joke. Shane will 10,000% double down on it because he's so stubborn and he works really hard and wants to prove people wrong. The way to Shane's heart is to be like, you're my number one. I've never cared about anyone the way I felt about you. It shook me to my core. There's no man like you in the world. You know, I know that you're with Natalie now. But, like, to sow that kind of doubt that there's someone who's more affirming out there who can, like, shower him with more praise and affection and be even more. Because Shayna has quite an edge, and she has to, like, show none of that. Unfortunately, she goes in, like, with the claws.
Yes, she didn't make the right calculation tactically, unfortunately. So
I'm curious. I also came way around on Shane and Natalie, and it's actually, yes, it's seeing them with their families and you know, seeing that Shane comes from someplace. It's honestly also meeting Shane's friends, and, like, I think Shane has some self-awareness, but I think the big moment for us, the shocker, just like in the first bundle of five episodes, the shocker was seeing Shake go from someone who was so shallow and obsessed with body image to recognizing that that was about his own issues, was watching Shane coach Shake on how to be a better person. And every bit of advice coming out of Shane's mouth was like gold.
Yeah. I don't know about better person, but, like, to try to get out of his love rut, let's say, like his sexual rut with Deep D, you know, like, and yeah, his advice was good because he's basically an audience surrogate in that moment. He's like, look, Shake, you're acting like a schmuck, like, at least do something, try some shit, you know, and, like, that's what Shane says, and it's very reasonable, and he says it in an appropriately aggressive way. So yes,
but also with some Shane positivity, which you can see, like, his qualities are more helpful, and you can actually see why Natalie's attracted to his sort of positivity and peppiness and, like, go-getting attitude.
Right. He's not, like, a dick about it. You know, it's very friendly and cordial, and yeah. So, which is hard for someone you've met, like, 4 weeks ago, probably, right? So, okay, who else do you want to talk about?
Well, so what do you think is going to happen with Shake and Deep D? So, we at this point, we have no idea what the outcome of anyone's weddings are. I think this final episode's got to be, like, very long. We'll see. There's five potential weddings left, I think. So, Shane and Natalie, I think they're going to get married.
Shane and Natalie, I think, are going to make it. I honestly think Shake and Deep D are going to make it, too. Now, the thing that's weird about it is that I have started following Deepthi on Instagram, and you know, they keep these, the Netflix or the PR firms keep these Instagram accounts freaking locked down. Like, there is so little, you know, because it's not like they're, that you see them together at all, right? I'm sure they're under instructions to not post social posts together, but there is no evidence in Deepthi's Instagram that she's with Shake at this moment, right? Like, at this time. So that's probably just Netflix, you know, doing their thing, but I'm also like, you know, so that's sowing me some doubt. But I do think they're going to make it as well. So, yeah.
Well, you had them picked as your number one most likely to make it. I think my most likely to make it last week was Ayana and Jarrett. I'm feeling less good about that now.
Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, in both of the teasers we've seen...
Spoilers from the teaser.
It's pretty clear that Ayana kind of like has some emotional moment, like, or maybe illness, I don't know, like on the wedding day. But it's really not that. It's that it is really a big, tall ask to marry somebody that you barely know. Knowing that you were their second choice, there's no way that doesn't weigh on you. And I have yet to hear, and maybe they just haven't shown it, Jarrett give a really good, you know, he said, well, it's only you now, you know, but that doesn't sound very good because the other person rejected him. I think she has been through a lot, like between the lines. She said directly, you know, that she survived an assault, you know, but also, so that was when she's 17, but she also mentioned that when she was 18, she met her current parents and they adopted her at 22. So you just get this sense that, like, for her bridal dress fitting, no one from her family or friends came. It was actually Jarrett's sister, I think, that came. So I think it would be very reasonable to be more hesitant and be more careful about your family structure, you know, like when you're her. And I think that plus being a second choice, I think it's just structurally maybe a little too much. And I want for Ayana, she's still my favorite.
Again, still our favorite character, you know, not character, person on the show. She seems like a lovely person who like is smart and charming and deserves the best.
I think Jarrett's great. Like, I like him. I don't know if he's the best. Do you know what I mean? Like, he seems fine. He seems good. I wonder if she could do better. Like, that's the question I have.
All right. Fair enough. Who are the two other couples, right? There's Danielle and Nick, right? Danielle and Nick, who are... that's the cliffhanger that the last episode 9 ends on. So, yeah, where are you with this one, Joy?
Well, I feel badly because I guess Nick tells Danielle on the wedding morning that he doesn't think it's in her best interest if they get married. And I actually think that is 100% correct. And I said last week that I thought this couple would actually be harmed by the pressure of the show, and they would have had a better chance of working out if they had this show plus 5 months to date, but that's not the way it is, for a reason, which is to engineer this bad outcome. But I think that her anxiety issues, like, are not well treated and not well identified, and so they lead to a lot of miscommunication and blaming and, like, rapid escalation of stuff. And you know, I'm sure his, like, listening could be a little bit better, but it's not his job to be superhuman so that she can have, so that her anxiety can rule both their lives, you know? So I think it's, I kind of hope they don't make it. I think it's actually for the best if they don't make it.
You know, it raises this kind of issue for me thinking about them is, like, in many ways, I feel like the show is actually quite wholesome. You know, even though it's like a bizarre setup and high pressure and stuff, but it's quite wholesome because the concept is love is blind. That is like, can you fall in love with someone without seeing who they are, right? Like seeing their physical appearance. And that's like that's an inherently wholesome idea because it's something that we've been taught from when you're young, like beauty is skin deep and it's what's on the inside that counts. Like people say those things to us and we grow up and like, they're not exactly 100% true, but like, you know,
approximately 1% true.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's like, it's trying to like capture that idea, right? And I think that, and so, and there's this idea, and the thing is, like, the show, like, unfolds in a fairly logical way of like, hey, let's do like these blind dates and then let's see if we have like passion by going on this vacation. And then let's like move in with each other and see if we can actually live with each other. And it's on a very accelerated timeline, but it's like fundamentally, these are the things that you would want to do and understand if you wanted to decide if you're married. Is there passion there? Can your lives fit in with each other? Do your families like each other? It's just like in a 3-week time period instead of, you know, 3 years. And so fundamentally, I think like many of the things that many of the behaviors and things like the show encourages are good. Many of the ideas and concepts the show encourages are good. But what I'm not a fan of is letting what are clearly like psychological issues, like what Danielle has, go untreated, or not like providing more like couples counseling or interventions or things like that, you know, that would be like massively psychologically beneficial to these people and like a very low hanging fruit, we would call it, you know, at work, like of like something that could like A, could be compelling television, B, would be helpful to people, would be educational to everyone, you know, like I don't know why they don't do that. Instead, they just kind of let these people flail. And you end up with a very bad situation like Danielle and Nick, in my opinion.
Well, I agree about the couples counseling. Obviously, the timeline is the thing that puts the most pressure on it. So if they were given twice that amount of time or three times the amount of time. But the challenge is that for the show to be a fun reality TV show that has suspense, that has stress and anxiety that leads to emotions and, you know, unfortunately, it has to be harder and worse for the contestants and yeah, less successful for the relationships, which I think is fairly shitty.
Yeah. So that it's not there are many bad aspects of the show too, like this whole wedding charade, like, and I can't imagine how mortifying that is, because, you know, regardless of how it plays out, people still need to like invite everyone there, you know.
Well, I mean, a number of the people are inviting, you know, like, hey, family, meet my fiance. By the way, I didn't even tell you I was going on this show, probably because they didn't think they were gonna end up engaged. Yeah. I guess the producers tell people stick with the engagement and see it through. Like, it's a process, like get to the end of the process. So I think that there's actually maybe even more doubt than we're seeing.
Unless you can't stand it, because people do like fall off before the wedding sometimes. It's happened in season one and in season two.
So you get a free, somewhat generic, possibly a little bit shitty and awkward wedding where like maybe part of your family doesn't show up because they don't support the process, you know, but it's free. And you get this life experience, and I guess if you're a romantic about it, you get to maybe meet your soulmate, maybe, in a possibly super stressful way. But the things you sign away, in addition to your privacy, are that it's going to be, like, in some ways, the cards are stacked against you. There will be a picnic for no apparent reason, so that your ex, who's now single, or your fiancé's ex can show up in a crop top. I think the question with Danielle for me actually crosses, though, an ethical line, which is I'm sure that she is a consenting adult and signed up to do it. But like, she is signing up for a situation that, you know, will actually almost certainly damage her. And she mentions that she lost like 70 or 80 pounds, which is an enormous amount of weight. And I think she might have lost it recently. I don't know how fast she lost it, but like, I have this fear. I don't know her in real life, obviously. I have this fear that if things don't go well, or she gets married and she feels a lot of pressure, so go well means she feels happy and comfortable, that she could have an eating disorder as a way to control, you know, out of this fear she has that someone is always, she literally said, skinnier or hotter, or that she might resort to, I mean, I think that's a form of self-harm. She might resort to other forms of self-harm. And I think that the way that Carter put it is, this person does not seem like they are in the mental space to have lost 70 to 80 pounds in a healthy way recently. So I don't like that they cast her. I don't like that they let her do the show. And I don't, again, I don't think they're under any legal obligation not to. It just feels ethically very icky to watch her spiral, knowing that if she were in a different situation, she would probably not be having this particular spiral, or she might have more access to resources and less pressure to make a decision.
Yeah. So I shouldn't be painting the show in completely rose-colored tinted glass. You know, like, it does some shitty things. It does some objectively shitty things as well. So I don't want to, like, underplay that. But, I mean, I guess I've also watched The Bachelor, and that feels way shittier to me, personally, you know? But you know, people can have their own differing opinions.
I think in The Bachelor, you it's a very transactional, like, you know what you're getting out of it, I guess, for mm-hmm. the most part. And I think there is a sort of, like, the wholesomeness of this show is actually the prop.
It's like a veneer of wholesomeness that hides, like, a darker aspect.
I don't think it's that. I don't think the ratio is, like, 1% chocolate shell and, like, 99% boiling oil insides. But, like, I think it's more to me that you can't actually...
I'm not sure which one is good in that analogy.
I don't think you can have it both ways, and this show is attempting to play it like it does not mm-hmm. have it both ways.
So the last couple, Mallory and Sal, is that right? Is that what his name is? That's the last couple, right? Yeah. What do you think?
I'm out on them. First of all, I have a girl crush on Mallory. And specifically, I just have a crush on her voice. Her voice is so incredible to me that, like, whenever I see Mallory, I'm like, that's the woman that has that voice. She looks amazing. Like, I associate her looks with her. I don't know. I've never... I guess I did fall for someone partly via their voice. That's you. Not...
Thanks.
Not someone else. Secondly, I don't like this ex-girlfriend showed up at Sal's sister's place and demanded to be let in thing. I cannot imagine that ever having happened. And I haven't dated all the most mature people in the world. And I've known lots of people who themselves, I mean, I was in my early 20s, mid-20s, hung out with different crowds.
Like, if you were dating a guy and that happened, you would be, like, deeply shaken by it, sounds like.
No one I know has ever had this happen.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I know a lot of people. And so I think what I'm saying is I think it's very beyond the pale. And it's not the fact that it happened. It's that he's like, oh, it was a very casual thing that me and her had. You know, clearly, I think she felt, the woman felt, that Sal was more into her and they had more of a relationship than they did. And the fact that he can just sit there, before I was his stoicism, I was like, he's so calm. He's so collected. What a reasonable person. Now I'm like, what's he hiding? You know, what's buried under there? So I'm not sure. I appreciate all his acts of service and romance and whatever that, you know, she seems to really dig, and that's fine. But I don't know.
That's fascinating. The thing that stuck out to me about that whole situation was Mallory saying, you know, if anything like this comes up again, I'm out on this whole marriage thing. I'm just like, dude, it's conceivable stuff like that could come up in like 3 months, you know, every 3 months. Like, you don't know. You fundamentally, when you marry someone, you're marrying someone who, you know, there's a lot of things you don't know about them that you find out over the years, you know, and that's just a fact of life. So it felt to me like a very kind of naive, honestly, perspective on it. But
what do you think she's wrong to have said that?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, we only see part of the relationship. We can't possibly know, like, what the full relationship is like. But from the parts that we see, it's kind of like, it's just weird for me to, like, set an arbitrary sort of threshold like that, in my opinion.
Well, I think one is a little too many because his story doesn't add up. And I think what she's saying is, if there's another woman out there that thinks she's dating you when you think you're engaged to me, that's a problem. Like, I think what happened is he ghosted this woman because he went on the show and she thought that they were dating, and out of desperation showed up at his sister's house and demanded to be let in and was super upset.
That does feel very plausible, but we don't know what happened. We don't know what happened, but that feels very plausible. But we don't know. But that's very plausible, but we don't know. Okay. Any other memorable things from this next batch episode?
Oh, I just want to call out the elephant in the room that wasn't there. No one brought up Jarrett stabbing.
Okay. Fair enough. I think there are many memorable moments from this season, this second batch of episodes. Seeing the contrast between Danielle and Nick's apartments was amazing. And arguing about Rock Band, you know, like, first of all, it's incredible that Danielle plays Rock Band. I don't think I've seen a Rock Band set in real life, in person, for like over 5 years. So the fact that she's playing Rock Band at all is incredible. The fact that she insists that the instruments, the plastic instruments, be kept out in the open is incredible. You know, like, I would say Nick's furniture is like tasteful, and you go to Danielle's house and it's chaos. It's just complete disaster chaos. And you got to assume she like cleaned it up for the cameras too. So
it's like if American Psycho in the 1990s had like a set sale, like where they got rid of all their excess, like there's like a, you know, glossy hand sculpture. Like, I have not seen this stuff except in a sort of cocaine fueled banker's like theoretical apartment in the 90s. It's very embarrassing.
Yeah. And I think probably, honestly, one of the most moving moments to me, you know, it was very nice for Deep Dee and Shake's parents to, like, you know, to meet each other's parents. They're all delightful. They're all lovely humans. But the part that really stuck out to me was, honestly, when Natalie tells her parents about Shane. And, you know, I will just say that Natalie, I think, is Korean, but she has Asian, East Asian parents. And I could definitely recognize my mom, you know, similarities with her mom. Like, just her mom kept saying, like, I can't handle this. It's like too fast. And like, my mom has said literally those words to me before when like I've been going through like life changes or whatever. And, you know, notice she's the only mom that said anything like that in the whole show, right? Like I can't handle this. This is too fast. And it was just like, wow, like, it's weird. It's a coincidence that, like, my mom, who's also Asian, like, has said the exact same things. Because, you know, I think they're very conservative and conventional and old school. And they, when I say they, I mean, like, my mom and potentially Natalie's mom. And, like, and so that was a powerful moment for me, you know, because also she's initially resistant and is slowly won over. Very much like my own mom, you know, like, so, yeah.
Well, I have several thoughts about that. One is that there are other moms who are not into it, who think it's too fast, but they express it differently. They express it as, well, it's his choice to make, and if that's what he wants to do, that's his life, or if that's what he wants to do, I'll support him. And I'm thinking of Nick's mom, who was not super into it at all. And...
Mallory's sister, I think it was, right?
Mallory's sister is like flat out opposed, basically. And she doesn't say it's too much, but she does say it's a lot, you know. And I do think the, I can't process this. There is a way of making it like it's all about me. And not like it doesn't matter what you think, but like it is important for me to be able to process this as opposed to in America, you know, the it's your life is the story, right? Especially for somebody that's 28 or 30 years old. I did think the dad was just like your dad. You know, like, can't you just hear her out? You know, much more like easygoing, much more like, oh, if you're happy, then I can see that I've succeeded as a parent.
Yes, yes. So I saw a lot of my own parents in Natalie's parents.
I will say, when you say that the mother was won over quickly, slowly. The mother was won over halfway in like a single afternoon, and I have never seen that happen with your mother. So I hope that that can be at some point. I have seen a lot of the no to this, immediately no.
Fair enough. So anyway, those are some memorable moments for me for the season. And yeah, you already mentioned like the Shane and Shake conversation was also very good. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Well, they also like left it unclear if Shake and Deep Dee actually have sex or even attempt to have sex. They maybe edited in a way that they don't never see them kissing or even hugging. And like the fact that he was so all over her the first time he saw her and then this has crept in, like, does make me think that there's something. It's not that he's simply unattracted to her.
Interesting. All right. Any other thoughts?
I can't believe we're going to go 5 for 5, right? How many do you think we're going to go in the end? How many weddings will there be?
2 to 3.
Yeah. So that would make it...
Shane and Natalie, Shake and Deep D, and a maybe on Jared and Ayana. Probably a no on Nick and Danielle. Like, almost definitely no on Nick and Danielle. And then the other one is Mallory and Sal. That's a maybe. Hard maybe on that one. So I think we're going to... It's safely 3 out of 5. And maybe Mallory and Sal, potentially. But... And 3 out of 5, give or take 1. That's what I would say.
Well, that's a big range out of 5. I am aligned, but that just makes me feel like the edit is telling us a certain story. And I feel so played by the difference between the cliffhangers I was left with 1 week ago and where I am now that I feel like, you know, anything could happen. Any footage could have been cobbled together in any which way. So I don't think we're going to go 0 for 5, but it could be 1 and it could be 4.
All right. Well, if you want to hear our reaction to the finale, just keep it tuned into patreon.com/DaveChen, because I guess we're going to do this again next week.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is people now have more time to catch up.
All right. Enjoy. And thank you so much for your support.